Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. 40 seconds to go. Stafford takes the knee. It is over in Los Angeles. The Rams take down the Texans 14-9 on opening day. Turnovers, penalties, other mistakes cost the Texans, who drop to 0-1 and look forward to the home opener against Tampa Bay September 15th on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, I take just negative plays. I think it's kind of obvious. You know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot consistently and expect to win. And that starts with me, you know, with a lot of different things. I got to get rid of the ball better and, you know, use my legs maybe a little more. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope still. We did a lot of good things. You know, it's a really good defense, it's a really good team. But I definitely think we could have won. But just you can shoulda, woulda, coulda all day. We didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't do the right things. So when you come out NFL lollygagging and, you know, not going through the motions, that kind of happens. So I think we'll be all right. But I think it's a good wake up call for us.
Just drop that in at the end. Lollygagging and going through the motions right at the end of that one. Boy, that was a. Some different stuff from C.J. Stroud in that post-game press conference that we will get to. Welcome in, everybody, on a Reaction Monday, reacting to a game in which the Texans scored 9 points yesterday with this newfangled offense. We welcome you in. I'm Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne. Seth, I don't often do this, but I think it is relevant and contextual because I think the biggest story today is this offense that we've been waiting for months and months and months. Came in and looked a whole lot like the old offense that we thought we were getting rid of. And I'm looking at texts from both 11 minutes ago and 8 hours ago when I was on here doing the post-game show, or 11 hours ago, yeah. Whatever it is. And I'll just read a couple of them because I think it's a good lead-in. Let's see here. Sean and Seth, did Kaylee pick up Bobby Slowick's play calling sheet? Same song, second singer. After viewing this game, I see no difference from last year. It looked like a following week game of last season. Go Texans.
Go Texans.
Go Texans, yeah.
There were honestly... There were a couple of good things that I can take from this game, but they're smeared over with a whole lot of the same stuff from last year, including, the offensive line. I mean, well, let's start with the offensive line. Not the only marked improvement was that they did a much better job of not having negative plays in the run game. A lot of that was when good blocking was in front of Nick Chubb, they did some good things. But when you've got a smattering of running backs, everybody gets a touch at some point. Nick Chubb only gets 13 carries in the game, and I'm guessing that they're trying to be careful with him and his health. And if that's going to continue, I'm not real optimistic about some of the positive things they did in the run game. Because Nick Chubb 13 times a game isn't going to churn the sticks when you're giving Damian Pierce touches, because why the hell not, apparently. It's 17 years from now, I fully expect to tune in on a Monday and be listening to somebody on this show say, wow, no, they're going to give Damian Pierce another shot here to go 1.3 yards per carry,
yeah.
Apparently, and drop passes to drop easy, easy passes on the final and critical drive for the Texans where they might have a chance. So there's that. Ogunbowale will be a key factor in the game late because apparently Nick Chubb hasn't done enough, or he's not healthy enough to do it. So there's that. The pass protection, not good enough. On third down, especially, like, there were just too many instances of easy pressure up the middle, off the edge, wherever it might be. In the run game, there were too many times, and there was that one third and one where they got stuffed, where you had both Ariante Irisier and Laken Tomlinson getting destroyed. But then also C.J. Stroud, he still looks like he's frazzled at times. The times when there was good pass protection, it was only a four-man rush. CJ's fleeing the pocket, or CJ's throwing the ball underneath instead of waiting for things to develop downfield. He just either can't trust the pass protection, So he's fleeing too early. He's fleeing backwards out the pocket.
Yeah.
And taking sacks. It was a disjointed mess. And I can't act like, oh, they didn't have Christian Kirk out there. Right. Oh, no. What are you going to do without Christian Kirk in the offense?
Right.
Can't score a touchdown or even a field goal in the second half without Christian Kirk in the offense.
Well, you've got zero evidence that Christian Kirk is the solution to anything because he's never played a game for the Texans. You know, so there's that. How do you go through this game watching the other play caller find ways to scheme open Puka Nacua for 10 receptions, Devontae Adams at the most crucial junctures of the game? I mean, you talk about third down. All four of his catches went for first downs in this game. He only had four catches for 52 yards. They all felt important. I feel like I can remember all four of them. Puka Nacua had 10 catches in this game for 130 yards. Meanwhile, Nico Collins is targeted 5 times the entire game. You've got Damian Pierce in. He was in on the drop you talked about, and then the subsequent toss sweep that he got on the next play, a play that he said on the postgame show 2 weeks ago he does not like running. He likes running up the middle. Yeah. That was on the second-to-last drive with about 9 minutes to go. And then Dario Gumbawale is getting touches on the final drive of the game, including one where he gets the ball punched out, game over for the Houston Texans. And meanwhile, you've got one of the 5 best receivers in football who is collecting dust the entire game. And I haven't watched the all 22. I haven't been able to see what the Rams did. If I were them, I'd want to take away Nico Collins also. But Clint brought this up in the postgame show. Run a jet sweep with him then. You know, run one of these screens that Bobby Slowick could not stop running last year. The Texans actually run them decent now with Nick Kaley. Do some of those. Get the ball in his hands.
Hey, guess what? You know what? If there's one takeaway from yesterday, I'm watching and I'm thinking, man, the Rams are just a smarter football team than the Texans.
Absolutely.
Texans are continually doing stupid things. But then part of it structurally with the defense is that, man, Jalen Petrie is not a cornerback. He is not a cornerback. And it's so easy for these veteran quarterbacks that when the Texans blitz, hey, look at that. We got Jalen Petrie manned up on Puka Nacua. Yep. There you go. And I mean, it's as simple as that. It's really not rocket science. A blitz. Yeah, there's my matchup. And off to the races you go. And likewise, right, it just can't continually be an excuse that, well, they're playing cover two. Not going to throw it to Nico. Versus a 4-man rush, test it sometimes. Yeah. I don't know, man. Figure out ways to seem. Right from the very get-go, when the Rams were coming out and running a whole bunch of, you know, 3 wide receiver trips formations, and you're watching and you're thinking, man, Stafford, if he has time, is just going to be able to pick out who he wants in that, because there's still questions about, despite your good cornerbacks, despite your good safeties, you've still got mismatches when it comes to zone coverage with your linebackers, with Jalen Petrie in coverage. And a guy like Stafford was really, I didn't want to crush the pass rush for the Texans right immediately after the game. I still don't think I will. Stafford was just, he was able to get the ball off on time and in rhythm so often. Derek Stingley was definitely banged up. I mean, he left the game after he got hit in the hip in the first series. And you could see the entire game where Devontae Adams just kind of taken what he wanted from Derek Stingley. Stingley was really hobbled afterwards. And it's not the only reason the Texans lost, obviously. The offense didn't do a damn thing.
No.
But that's a big thing to think about this week. Is just, all right, what's the injury report on Wednesday? Is Derek Stingley going to be all right on Monday night? Or I guess we'll get the first injury report on Thursday this week.
Yeah, we'll get the first injury report. Everything's kind of pushed back a day this week with the Monday night football game. I think this team played like a poorly coached football team yesterday.
Sloppy. You know what, Sean? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You're right. When it comes to, hey, what have I been saying all preseason? Yeah. The pre-snap operation looks better. Yeah. Then you've got delay of games.
Yep.
You've got multiple illegal shifts.
Yep.
You're struggling to get the snap off in the second half. That did not look like a well-coached football team at all.
It was all the same stuff. It was all the same stuff from last year. All the stuff we were watching in the preseason. Oh, look, they're getting to the line with 18 seconds to go on the play clock. And yesterday it was like, there's 9 seconds. You know, you may want to start doing your thing here. This 11 penalties for 80 yards. And there was not a big chunk one in there where it's, you know, like 35 of it was a pass interference. It was death by 1,000 paper cuts with all the procedural penalties. There was stuff on defense, too. It was mostly offense, delay game. Seth, as you said, this was D'Amico Ryans on the 11 penalties yesterday. Sorry, Ben.
Yeah, the penalties are it's uncalled for, right? It's all controllable, things we can control. And you know, if you stand up here and we're talking about negative plays, talking about going backwards, this is not what we talked about. Main thing offensively, wanted to stay on track, right? And we got some unfortunate penalties that put us behind the sticks and just put us in some really long third downs that we weren't not able to manage. So we have to clean up the penalties.
And we're going to be all over the place this morning because there's so much to dig into. But the first drive, like the first – we've been saying all offseason, got to stay in second and six, got to stay in second and five. And the very first drive of the season, they're in second and 23. You know, because Cam Robinson like, horse collars a guy to the ground. You know, like it's just, and then and CJ is culpable in some of this too. And I tweeted this last night as I was sifting through the autopsy of this thing, Seth. Is it both quarterbacks took 3 sacks in this game? Matthew Stafford took 3 sacks for 21 yards. That's not good, but it's, you know, it's 6-7 yards a sack, whatever that is. CJ Stroud's 3 sacks are 13, 12, and 12 yards. Like, yeah. CJ has a bad habit of taking a bad situation and making it worse.
And as they pointed out on the broadcast, the one sack where it was Jake Andrews' guy that got CJ. CJ, step up there. What
step
are you doing?
Yep.
Step up. Like there were instances. The first down that he ran for early in the game, in the first quarter, he ran to the right, but he also had somebody wide open over the middle in a clean pocket. I mean, I don't know why he's fleeing a clean pocket as often as he is, other than that he's still frazzled from last year. And guess what? He can't trust an offensive line that's being shuffled around and rejiggered on the fly throughout the day. Ariante Irisarry is playing left tackle and right tackle. I mean, it's the offensive line is – here we go. It's a shambles again already. Week one, it's a shambles.
Okay. So let's stick with this in the next segment. We are going through yesterday's game, 14-9. The Rams beat the Texans in the opener. No touchdown scored by the Texans on offense. This offensive line was a huge topic in the postgame show yesterday. And the approach that D'Amico Ryans took, how much do they hate Juice Scruggs right now? How much must they not trust Juice Scruggs to not just take him and plug him in for Ed Ingram with all this shuffling? And CJ let a little bit of a window into what this means for a quarterback when you're moving all these guys around. We'll hear from D'Amico Ryans on this. We'll hear from CJ Stroud on this. We'll take a look around the NFL. That Sunday night game did not get me enthused for the rest of the schedule this year, watching the Ravens and the Bills play last night. Certainly not for Week 5. So we got a lot to get into, man. It's a Reaction Monday. It's the first one of the year, and they've given us plenty of material. That's all coming up next. Oh, stop
second
me.
Second and a long three across the Houston 26-yard line. Stroud shotgun. Job in the backfield. CJ gets the snap. Pocket collapsing. CJ's going to go down. Byron Young brings him down deep in the backfield. He had Chubb to his left to dump it off to, but CJ kept looking to the right side for something to develop, and now it's going to be third or second and very long.
Yeah, that was CJ, the first sack of the game. Actually, it was second down. It became third and 16. It was second and 3, became third and 16. 13-yard sacks, man. 13 when sacks are on the offensive line to a degree, when they're 13-yard sacks and 12-yard sacks, there's stuff the quarterback can be doing to at least mitigate the damage. Just not a good day for the offense. Seth, stop me if you've heard this before. The offense didn't score any points in the second half of that football game yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. That's where I know. I think people might be surprised if you were to just drop in and see that people were so upset about a 16-9 loss. You would look at it and you would immediately think, well, yeah, you'd be upset that the Texans didn't score any, score any touchdowns. Certainly you'd love to see at least one touchdown in the game. But, I mean, these majestic, methodical, precision field goal drives in the first half, I suppose. There was something where you might think, all right, boy, if they can build on this. Nope, it was squashed conclusively and completely in the second half. And I just, there's so much from last year that was a carryover. People are accurate in saying they just look like they picked up where they left off last year. The only real positive that I take from the game offensively was that they were at least running the ball for positive yardage consistently. It wasn't impressive yardage other than Nick Chubb's runs.
Yeah.
But Nick Chubb only got 13 carries in the game. Damian Pierce has two incomplete passes and nothing as a runner in the game. You've got to try to run Woody Marks a few times. Ogunbowale is a key factor in the fourth quarter. It's like nothing about that really felt good other than that, okay, Nick Chubb still got something in the tank.
These aren't things that Super Bowl teams say about their team in week one. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like these just like, I'm not saying what you're saying isn't a positive given how last year went.
No, you're 100% correct. Yeah.
Like they were getting positive yardage running the football. What are we doing?
I feel like a dirty little, I feel dirty even saying it.
Yeah. No,
I feel dirty even saying it. Hey, we didn't get tackled for a loss.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So the shuffling on the offensive line, Ed Ingram, mind you, not Quentin Nelson. This is the shuffling you go through when Ed Ingram, who you picked up for a six-round pick, misses the game due to an abdomen issue. So he's inactive for the game. So the solution for the Texans along the offensive line is to, instead of putting in your backup guard, which I think is what backup guards are for, right? Like when your frontline guy gets hurt, you put the backup in. That's usually what happens. Before I explain the whole rigmarole, that's normally what happens, right?
But I mean, it's worse than that, though. Yeah. Okay.
Normally, that's what happens. You go, okay, well, who's our swing interior guy? Go play guard. The Texans, instead of just putting in their backup guard, move their rookie left tackle over to right tackle, move their right tackle to right guard, and they put in a new left tackle who had lost his job to said rookie left tackle. All right. Cam Robinson goes down in the game. And oh, here's another opportunity to put in Juice Scruggs. But instead of going back to your best tackle combo, they move right tackle to left tackle. They put in Blake Fisher, who's been bad throughout training camp. All of this to, you know, like just kind of try to keep your best five guys on the field in their eyes, I guess. Here, before we get to it, Seth, here was D'Amico Ryans, who, by the way, in his last press conference said he was tired of answering questions about the offensive line. Very first question right out of the chute. What went into the decision to shuffle the offensive line?
Yeah, our offensive line was our offensive line. We had five guys we had out there that were up, and injuries unfortunately happen throughout the week, so shuffling will take place. That's the NFL. That's the nature of the league. Guys go down. You have to move guys around, and we don't complain about it. It's, hey, you got to show up and just get your job done.
No, we complain about it.
Okay, so this is where I don't understand where this newfound affection for Juice Scruggs has come from people asking why didn't Juice Scruggs go in, because Juice Scruggs he was awful last year.
Yeah.
And he was just awful. And I don't know if he's any better this year. The problem is that this is the situation they're in where you don't actually have a backup interior
That's
offensive
my point.
Lineman that
yeah.
you feel good about.
Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, and then, but when it does come to the shuffling, the sack that we played coming in,
yeah.
That one wasn't on CJ. Ariante Ursary got just destroyed
yeah.
in a way that he's a rookie. I'm going to be patient with him, but this is what I was worried about coming to this game. Ariante Ursary will let guys get into his body a little bit. And in college, that's cool when you weigh 335 pounds, you can get away with it. You can't get away with it against these
not that
pass
D-line.
Rushers like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he just got absolutely destroyed on that play. So CJ doesn't really have a chance on that one. CJ would cause his own problems later on in the game. But, I mean, this is the problem, is that the offensive line as constructed is you have a right guard that was a backup last year in Minnesota. He got benched. He's a backup. But he's starting for you. When you get rid of him, you've got a guy who's a backup to a previous backup in Juice Scruggs. And I can agree with D'Amico's theory there on the surface, but the problem is you're already in a situation in week one where, man, your lack of guys that you feel genuinely good about and the lack of depth behind them is already starting to hurt. And you got, I mean, I don't know. Ariante Ursary, now that he's okay, he's playing left tackle, he's playing right tackle, he's playing left tackle. It feels so much like Xavier Suafilo back
yes,
in the day.
Yes.
I'm back to it. This doesn't feel like last year. This feels like the worst elements of the Bill O'Brien era.
Yep.
where, okay, you're just going to move a rookie around all over the place and expect to get anything out of him or develop him? I don't know, man.
Yep.
Versus this defensive line especially?
Yeah, yep. Here was – I think this was interesting. This was C.J. Stroud when he was asked following the game about all the shuffling going on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's not easy, you know. It's something that just – what you're going to complain about, or you're going to, you know, or you're going to lay down, or you're going to go play. So for me, I just try to compete. Trying to compete as best as I can and show those guys that I don't care who's in there, like, I trust in you. And by the way I play, I try to play as hard as I can to show that I'm there for them and also vocally as well. So, but, yeah, even, you know, our receiver a little bit, you know, we got some guys, you know, hopefully coming back hopefully soon. So, yeah, it's not always easy, but, you know, that's why I'm in the position I am, to try to, you know, solve some of those issues, because everybody deals with injuries. But, you know, I think I've, you know, try to do my best at that.
So it's an issue. I mean, he said right at the beginning there, it's not easy. And CJ's not going to all of a sudden spend a minute on a soapbox telling you how hard it is for him to, you know, to do this with a shuffling offensive line. I'm with you. I'm not saying it was the wrong approach given the personnel that you have. What I'm saying is that you've got a backup guard on the roster that you feel so uninclined to play in a game when the situation is what being a backup guard is made for. It's the guard goes down, put this guy in. Find somebody to put on the roster that you feel capable of going in to play guard.
Right, and now, and that part of it too is that, all right, Juice Scruggs, I don't have any confidence in Juice Scruggs, but I also now don't also have any confidence in Ariante Ursary playing both left tackle and right tackle in a game. And on that play, Byron Young... Byron Young ends up, it was funny, man. He went to forklift him. Yeah, but he basically grabs Ariante Ursary by the hands, almost like when you play that strength game of clasping hands and over your heads and
that all the time.
Yeah, the wrestlers. Yeah, like the pro wrestler thing. Yeah. And Ariante Ursary looked like the what do they call the guys that are just jobbers or whatever?
Jobbers,
and
they call them.
He's just wearing yellow trunks and he's just getting destroyed.
Had no walkout music.
But no, and it was against Byron Young. It was like a jobber going against The Rock in his prime.
That's
or something.
Exactly right. Good job,
Seth. Not Skinny Rock.
No, not this version. No, yoked up Rock. Look, offensive line not good. It's interesting. Text message: super disappointed in the offensive display. I mean, lack of offensive display. Defense was not impressive either. No Super Bowl this year. Defense was not impressive either, was what I want to ask you about. They gave up 14 points. You look at the score sheet, you know, they gave up, less than 300 yards in total offense. To me, it's interesting, Seth, when you go and look, these two teams who were mirror images of each other last year in terms of the results, same record, won the division, knocked out in the same round of the playoffs by the team that went to the Super Bowl out of their conference. Like, the results were extremely similar. I thought it was interesting yesterday, same number of first downs, ran the same number of plays, time of possession pretty even. Like, the stat sheet, for the most part, between these two teams played very evenly yesterday. Now, if you watched the game, you know it was not even. That when the Rams needed to make plays, they did. And where that's reflected is 2 out of 9 on third down for the Texans, 7 out of 13 on third down for the Rams.
And it was really also the tale of two halves. Yeah. And that's a big part of it. It's that the Stafford in the second half, just right off the bat in that first drive, just looked like he was taking what he wanted with ease. And a lot of times, the Texans' pass rush was better than I thought it was when going back and watching it, but Stafford was just getting the ball off on time and in rhythm. And he really wasn't stressed all that much. He was able to, I don't want to overly talk about halftime adjustments as much as just Stafford by the second half had figured the Texans out a little bit.
Well, we hear coaches talking all the time, and D'Amico may have said it at some point, about the middle eight, the last 4 minutes of the first half, the first 4 minutes of the second half, and how coaches really seem to stress that. That's why when you get the ball to start the second half in a game, it just feels like an advantage that when you get the ball. They scored all 14 of their points in the middle eight, the Rams did. They scored their first touchdown on the last drive of the first half. They scored their second touchdown on the first drive of the second half. They dominate. And I'll give the Texans credit in between. They did go down and get 3 points to close out the half. That was, if there were any positives offensively, I would say that that was one of them. CJ using his legs, I thought, was one of them, which he did on that last field goal drive. He got that 14-yard scramble to set up Kaimi with a makeable field goal. That was a little thing. But the Rams, this middle eight that all the coaches talk about nowadays, that's when the Rams scored all their points. End of the first half, beginning of the second half yesterday.
The Texans had 200 yards or so of offense in the first half, and in the second half they fell off a cliff.
They wound up with 260 something. So that's
the other thing too. I mean, it's credit to Azeez Alshire for creating that turnover on the Rams' second to last drive. But that's where also the score is a little bit deceptive, because ifs and buts and what have you, but the Rams were going to score at least 17 points, and on a pretty much like a game sealing drive at the end of the game.
Yeah,
that's the trouble with that. That final drive and turnover for the Rams was, all right, they could have easily scored 17 or 21 points in that game. But then also on the final drive of the game, when the Texans had one last desperation potential, chance to get another shot at it, they converted with relative ease on that too. So the tale of the second half was just so much different than the first half. Anything positive that they might have shown in the first half just felt like it got snuffed out immediately in the second half.
It was a super deceptive box score. If you watch the game, you go, okay, forget about what the numbers look like. It looked easy at times for one team. It never, ever, ever looked easy offensively for the Houston Texans. Not at any juncture in the game did it look like they had rhythm on offense. Did it look like they had made progress throughout the offseason offensively? Not at one point. And they scored 9 points in the game. They didn't score a touchdown. It played itself out that way.
You know what? Okay, and this is perfect. This is exactly what I thought. I didn't know if they'd have these stats out yet. But, yes, as of right now, after one, every game except one has been completed so far, second fastest time to throw in the NFL so far this season is Matt Stafford.
Yeah.
2.42 seconds per throw.
Yeah.
And that matches up exactly with what it looked like. That's why the pass rush was better than I thought it was. When I went back and watched, I'm like, oh, all right. There's no time to get there. Stafford is just, he's dropping back and the ball is coming out.
That's how you turn the most scrutinized herniated disc in the NFL into a complete non-story the entire game.
It's
the most overblown story in the offseason now in retrospect, because of the way Sean McVay engineered that offense for Matthew Stafford. Is there a bigger overblown story from the offseason than Matt Stafford's back after yesterday? At any point in the game, did that guy look like a guy who was hindered by a back injury?
No, especially once they went for the QB sneak on third down and it was unsuccessful, I'm like, oh, okay, his back's feeling fine.
Yeah.
And I don't know, whatever, I don't know if it's Stafford's decision or McVay's, but I don't know if I would have done that. I don't care how good his back feels in the moment.
No kidding.
I just want to do everything I can to keep that guy from straining himself too much. But once he did that, I thought, all right, well, unless you actually get to him and hit him or something, then you're probably not going to have much of this guy's going to be a healthy Matt Stafford. And he came out in the second half and really looked like it.
He sure did.
But yeah, 2.42 seconds per throw, just super easy for him.
Getting it out
super,
fast. Super easy. Yep, getting it out fast. All right, CJ taking some on the text page. We'll get to that as the show rolls on here. We're with you till 8 a.m. today on a Reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610. Football talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Headlines are coming up next. We've not gotten to the Astros yet, so we will get to them in headlines. We'll certainly get to the Texans as well. Some really exciting games yesterday, too, around the NFL that we will get to.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
40 seconds to go. Stafford takes the knee. It is over in Los Angeles. The Rams take down the Texans 14-9 on opening day. Turnovers, penalties, other mistakes cost the Texans, who dropped to 0-1 and look forward to the home opener against Tampa Bay, September 15th on Monday Night Football.
I'm Mark Vandermeer on the call, as always. Texans lose 14-9 yesterday to the Los Angeles Rams in their 2025 season opener. The big story in this one, the offense for 2025 looked a whole lot like the offense from 2024. As Vandy mentioned, penalties, 11 penalties for the team for 80 yards. Turnovers, a big one by Daria Gumbawale late in the game as the Texans were driving for what could have been a go-ahead touchdown, aided greatly by a roughing the passer penalty that kept that drive alive. There was just nothing easy offensively for the Texans all day long. D'Amico Ryans was asked after the game with the offense, where can he see progress being made?
Yeah, for us offensively, in the first half, I mean, we drove down, we got field goals. We needed to get in the end zone there, but we had some really successful drives, just got to end in the end zone. And then there, you know, at the end of the game, you know, it's the NFL, right? Fourth quarter, that's why everybody watches it. We got the ball, we got a chance to drive down and score. We're making progress, we're making plays. And the one thing that we talked about, the main thing throughout the week of what it was going to take for us to win this game, it was protecting the football, right? They took the ball away two times and took it at the most critical time of the game there as we're driving down to score. They make a play to take the football away, but we're in striking distance. We don't make the play, they made the play. Credit to the Rams. They showed up and they played really well today and they made the plays and we came up short on a few.
Yeah, they're doing it again. D'Amico's doing it again where he kind of overstates the offense and what they actually accomplished. They had one trip into the red zone. You know, let's not make it sound like you drove down inside the 5-yard line and Kyme Fairbairn had to kick three chippies. He kicked a 51-yarder, a 45-yarder, and a 53-yarder to close out the half. Like, you never threatened the Rams really all day long until that last drive, and you couldn't hold on to the football at that point.
And a whole lot of self-inflicted wounds to go along with it, where at the very least what I hoped was for a cleaner operation out of the offense. But right off the bat, you've got delay of games, you've got illegal shifts, you've got all of these things that make it tougher on the quarterback. And we're sitting here where, man, you can say all you want about, well, you know, they take Nico Collins out of the game with shell coverages, this, that, the other thing. Great. Puka Nacua goes off for 130 yards on 10 receptions, just taking it at will at times. I mean, Sean McVay's a better offensive coordinator than Nick Caley right now, as far as we can tell, obviously.
Yep.
Big surprise there, I suppose. But the ease with which the Rams did it in the second half is really disconcerting to me. And I'm Nico Collins, you got him on a great deal. You got him on a bargain deal now because you signed him up early last year. Okay, right now it feels like I bought a gross of Cheese Whiz at the wholesale club.
Ooh, I like Cheese Whiz.
But I don't like Cheese Whiz or eat it. So it's sitting in my pantry.
Yeah.
Because I just, what am I going to do with all this Cheese Whiz? I don't know. I got a great deal on it. Nico Collins, same thing. Apparently they don't like figuring out ways to get the ball to Nico Collins.
They don't like figuring out ways to get Nico Collins onto a Philly cheesesteak. I love me some Cheese Whiz on a Philly cheesesteak.
So, part of it, and now this is true though too, and it's the same issue as last year. Again, Groundhog Day with this offense. All right, if they want to play a lot of coverages to deep zones to keep Nico Collins out of the game, you know what beats that? If you have some time to let things develop, if you can protect CJ and have him sit in the pocket. But now, there were also times in the game where it's third and long and it's a 4-man rush. And CJ, you can sit there and wait, but he didn't. I mean, he threw one on a third and long. It was a 4-man rush. The pass protection was good. It's third and 10 plus. And CJ throws to Jaden Higgins, on kind of a sacrifice over the middle field position type of throw. Like that's a time where it's okay. It's okay to. It's in the fourth quarter. Just go ahead and if the pass protection's good, give it some time to develop. And he can't trust the offensive line.
Yeah.
But then there's other times where the pass protection is good, but he's not stepping up into the pocket and taking deep sacks. It's all a big mess right now.
Yep, it's a big mess. So we'll see. Boy, tonight's Monday Night Football game has a very interesting Texans angle to it. The Texans don't play either of these teams this year, the Vikings nor the Bears. You can hear the game on Sports Radio 610. The angle to this, though, is that there were a few teams that really needed to revamp their offensive line this offseason, most notably the Texans and the Bears. although Minnesota decided to make some investment in it as well. These are two teams tonight, Seth, the Minnesota Vikings and the Bears in particular, that invested heavily into protecting their young quarterbacks. J.J. McCarthy for the Vikings, Caleb Williams for the Chicago Bears. We know the Bears traded for Joe Tooney, gave him a big deal. They signed Dahlman in free agency to be their center. They trade for Jonah Jackson. Meanwhile, the Vikings give big money to Will Fries from Indianapolis, Ryan Kelly from Indianapolis. These are two teams that decided to fix their offensive line. I think the way that most Texan fans wanted the Texans to go about it, which is go get some guys, some proven guys out there. The Texans chose to go the journeyman route, invest a draft pick in Ariante Ursary, which that part I don't have an issue with. So far, the experiment for the Texans is not working out at all. There will be some agitated Texans if after the game tonight the final score is 38-35 and both teams are moving the ball up and down the field.
And the quarterbacks both look like the best version of themselves. Hey, look, you protect a young quarterback in J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah,
hey,
man.
Caleb Williams, different guy when he's got some protection in front of him. If this is a high-scoring game, Sean, I'm going to stab both my eyes out with a dull butter knife.
On YouTube. Yeah.
You might say, Seth, by definition, isn't a butter knife dull? No, this is even dull by butter knife standards, okay?
This is the dullest. It's going to be really
painful. This is a non-serrated plastic fork.
Right, right. This is not going to be a quick process. It's going to take me multiple stabbings to get my eyes gouged out.
Or a non-serrated plastic knife. And again, with the draft, you traded back out of the first round when Josh Simmons or the offensive lineman from Oregon that went to
Josh Connerly
were available. And then you end up trading up for Ariante Ursary. Ursary had some rough snaps yesterday, but he's also a rookie who's playing both left and right tackle in a game versus one of the best defensive fronts
in his first game. Not in a game, in his first game. His
versus
opener.
One of the best defensive lines in the NFL.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Because you cannot put Juice Scruggs on the field right now, apparently. Cannot do
which I get, and I understand why you can't, but then the question is, why is Juice Scruggs the backup interior offensive lineman?
100%. You and I are on the same page on that one.
And then Jake Andrews goes out, and it looks like it was a bad injury, and I feel bad for him, yet at the same time, I'm sitting there, I'm like, yeah, this is the guy you picked up off of the scrap heap in New England. So now you're scrambling to replace the guy that you picked up off the scrap heap in New England, and it's the guy in Jared Patterson who was displaced by the guy who you picked up off the scrap heap in New England.
That one at least felt like a conventional replacement of a guy, though. I'm like, oh, your center goes out, and you got this backup center who's played some games in the NFL. Put that guy in. I don't know how good he is, but just put him in. You know, that at least felt like, oh, my God, Jake Andrews is out. We gotta put Kate Stover at left guard, and we gotta put you didn't have to move seven guys around to accommodate your lack of depth. Let's get to the Astros real quick. We'd have gotten to them quicker, except it's just as bad there as it was for the Texans yesterday. They lose to the Rangers 4-2. They lose 2 out of 3 to the Rangers. The lead is down to 2.5 games in the AL West. I guess the good news from the weekend would be that Hunter Brown outdueled Jacob deGrom. You know, if you find yourself in a playoff series. With the Texas Rangers, you feel
Hunter Brown the day after going 12 innings gives you 7 really good innings. Does everything you need him to do.
Yeah, everything you need to know about the bullpen depth for the Astros right now is they chose to bring in Lance McCullers in an extra innings game. They were they had nobody left, and he promptly walked a guy and gave up the game winning hit. Didn't get anybody out.
Every time they bring Lance in now, I'm like, is Cesar Salazar not available?
Chaz is in Sugarland. Why is our best reliever down in Sugarland playing outfield right now? Just not a great. And by the way, Caleb Ort, speaking of the bullpen, he's the latest to catch the right elbow inflammation bug for the Astros. That happened over the weekend.
When did the Arrigetti news come down? I think that was after our show.
We talked about it last week. We talked about it
it's
on Friday.
Blur.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a lot of injuries, man. It's a lot of right elbows. Is it contagious?
And that's, don't worry, everybody. They don't see anything just yet on the imaging, but part of that's because there's so much inflammation that they can't tell. So,
dude, all these guys.
I'm not laughing at Arrigetti's pain. I'm laughing at the absurdity of the situation.
It's crazy how many guys, like, it's contagious. They're going to have to mask up. In the clubhouse, it's contagious. They're all catching right elbow inflammation. Don't breathe on anybody. Social distancing.
Yeah, and you think the Astros are going to spring for the N95? Not a chance in hell.
Social distancing in the clubhouse so you don't get a right elbow.
No, the Astros are going to be using used bandanas from a thrift shop.
Oh, yeah. Little GPS trackers. Everybody's getting warned because they're all standing near each other. Oh, my God. All right, those are your headlines. I don't know what to tell you. All right, let's take a trip back through yesterday's game. The crucial plays in yesterday's game, I think, highlight a lot of the areas that this team has got some serious work to do. And, of course, we're talking about the Texans losing to the Rams 14-9. Through the voice of Vandy, we take a trip back through yesterday's game, and we'll do Acknowledge Me at 7:20, where there will be zero Texans or Astros acknowledged in this version of Acknowledge Me. That is coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's take a look at yesterday's game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We're going to go back through the important plays in this game. And after a loss, it feels like an autopsy a little bit. So buckle up. We've got about, I don't know, 7, 8, maybe 9 important plays here we're going to go through. Texans lose 14-9 as we welcome you in on a Reaction Monday. Maybe you're just getting in your car. The themes of today so far have been this looks a lot like last year's offense. Defense kept you in the game. They made their own fair share of mistakes. And we got to figure out what happened. So, first one for me, Seth, in terms of crucial plays, and there were lots of them. We won't get to all of them. But these, to me, were the most crucial. This wound up being the longest play of the day for the Houston Texans from scrimmage. This was Jaden Higgins with a 24-yard catch that helped set up your first points of the game.
First down for the 29. CJ fakes the give. Dancing around. Throwing downfield. And this is caught by Higgins across midfield. Takes a hit. Hangs on across the 49-yard line of the Rams. Welcome to the NFL rookie.
Yep.
6'4", using every bit of that height to make a 24-yard gain into Rams territory.
Yep, that would be the longest play of the game. That would be the deepest the Texans would even attack the field. There weren't even any attempts downfield to longer than 24 yards in this game by the Houston Texans. A lot of that had to do with CJ didn't have a ton of time to do that. This was still early in the game, though, Seth, where I was encouraged. The play right before this was the one where CJ kind of spun out of the pocket and found Dalton Schultz for 11 yards for a first down.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this. I'm going, okay, now this, it's the second drive of the game. Your first drive, you went 3 and out because you had a holding penalty in there. But, you next drive, it looks like you've cleaned a few things up and you go down and you get 3 points. I was encouraged at this point in the game.
The one thing about this, and this would be a theme throughout the day, it was the pass protection was good on this, but they also kept 7 guys in to pass protect. So you've only got a couple of guys out on routes downfield, and everything's got to work out just right before the Rams have had a chance to make any adjustments or anything. But even on this, I mean, Jaden Higgins ends up taking a big shot. He has to reach for the ball.
Big shot.
And CJ's kind of throwing it as he's sifting forward when he didn't need to. And there were a few plays today where CJ, he just didn't throw with the same touch that Matt Stafford does.
Yeah.
The one Dalton Schultz breakup on the pass to the right where Dalton Schultz had to reach behind him a little bit would have been a first down, but the pass gets broken up. He can't, he bobbles it and comes down with it while he's out of bounds. That wasn't a classic C.J. Stroud throw. That was just not quite right. The ball placement isn't necessarily there. And this is early in the game. I can't really give – even though this is a good play, I'm not seeing the ball placement specialist C.J. Stroud.
No.
And this was from a clean pocket.
Yep.
With him not really setting his feet the way that he's capable of doing.
All right. So the Texans, it's close game in the first half here. The Texans get their first break of the game up 3-0 when the Rams, the center snaps the ball over Matthew Stafford's head and Stafford recovers it deep in Rams territory. The Texans get their first good field position of the game. They would wind up getting a field goal on this drive, but man, this was a painful one because they were moving the football. They got the ball at about midfield. They'd moved it. This was their only trip into the red zone all day. The Texans, they had a 2nd and 10 at the Rams 17-yard line. No, sorry, they had a 3rd and 8 at the Rams 15-yard line, and they were moving the football, and then this happens.
Straight out of the gun, 3rd and 7 at the Rams 15. One back, Daria Dumbawale. 3 receivers to the right. CJ to throw. He's in trouble. CJ's going to go down. He's sacked. And the ball comes out. Do they pick it up? The Texans still have it. That ball came out, and Ursary, the rookie, helped make sure that it wasn't going to go to the other team.
So this was McCullough, number 2 for the Rams, coming on a corner blitz. This felt like me, Seth. You tell me if I'm right here. This felt like one of those plays that CJ, now given all this control at the line of scrimmage, should have seen something before the snap. Well, all the protections going one way, and then this guy comes in from the left.
Sometimes they just get you with a well-dialed up blitz, but it's the guy off the edge was CJ's responsibility.
Yeah.
And he's looking to his right. You've got the left tackle and the running back responsible for 3 guys. So the guy on the outside's responsible. But Ogunbowale, by the way, doesn't end up even taking care of the inside rusher either. So it was botched. Even if the edge – this is where everybody's to blame here, because, yes, the edge defender is unaccounted for by design, but then Ogunbowale and Ursary don't do a good job either. So it would have been – might have been a sack regardless. It was a full-blown meltdown of – just unawareness, poor execution, everything that I was hoping that I wouldn't see, especially down as you're approaching the red zone. Yeah, it was a bad play.
Yeah, the sacks were just so punitive in this game.
That was in the red zone, wasn't it?
It was. They were at the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
And so, ultimately that becomes a 10-play, 19-yard drive for a field goal. You get points out of it, but, you know, that's – the Rams gave you an opportunity, man. They snapped the ball over Matthew Stafford's head, and that thing went skidding back 25 yards deep into their territory. You couldn't take advantage of it. The Rams get the ball back. The Rams would end up scoring before the half. Texans put up a good front when it was goal to go. They stopped Stafford on a QB sneak, 3rd down. And then the 4th down play here to Kyren Williams, man. I thought it looked like a play from the snap. I'm like, okay, this feels like a play the Texans might be able to stop. Unfortunately, they did not.
4th and goal inside the 1. Stafford under center. Williams in the backfield. Stafford flips the ball to Williams. Running left. Breaks the tackle. He's in. They almost got him. They couldn't do it. Rams score the touchdown. Game tied at the moment with the extra point out of the way to help the Rams take the lead.
The run fit on this, I think Petrie went underneath.
Attacking.
And if he hadn't, like if he had stayed to the front side, Azeez Alshire would have come back. Petrie. That's the one, just like some of the little details and some of the things that Petrie didn't have a great day, man.
No.
Petrie did not have a great day in pass coverage, especially. But part of that I put on the Texans. He's not a cornerback. So this is a run play. This is why you have Petrie in there. And okay, make that play at the very least.
Yeah.
You don't. As a cornerback, he's not a cornerback. He's a safety/linebacker. And the Rams just picked on every bit of weakness you have by having Jalen Petrie out there playing the role that he does. The Rams exploited it, and they did a great job of it. And I put a lot of that more on the way the Texans go in, expect, like we saw this last year where Petrie is going to be a weakness in coverage at times. What are you going to do to make up for it? Apparently nothing. That's what you're going to have to live with.
But that wasn't a coverage play. To your point, that play is why he is getting $13 million a year now. He's expected to make that play. Don't go underneath the tackle, man. You're at the goal line. Like if somebody's coming
Will
in
Anderson,
to clean up, if someone's coming in to clean up your mess, they're cleaning it up 3 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, Will Anderson did a great job on that play. He took on 2 guys to set the edge and turn it back in, and it could have been snuffed out very quickly. Like Petrie, listen, you're not Ray Lewis. You're not allowed to. You're not J.J. Watt. You're not a guy that's allowed to go backdoor on things because you're so blazingly fast.
Yeah,
you got to come up and just bury people.
Yep. Okay, so the Texans get the ball back after that touchdown with under a minute to go in the half. This, I thought, was one of the bright spots of the game, is that the Texans went down and got some points right before the half. The big key here, though, was C.J. Stroud. They weren't in field goal range until C.J., right before the half, did this.
Second down and 10 at the Ram 49. One back, Stroud in the gun. Stroud looking from the pocket, scrambling forward. C.J. on the move, running across the 40. Running out of bounds, first down and more. But 3 seconds to go. He does get them into field goal range.
Yeah, he did. And Kaimi, and you know what? Credit Kaimi, too. Kaimi looked a lot more like the Kaimi the first 5 weeks of last year, Seth, than he did from December on last year, where he was really, really shaky. So Kaimi did good things yesterday.
Did good, actually. Was it just me? Or I felt like there was way too much hang time on those kicks.
I'm not getting
like kicked. I'm like, man, that thing is just wafting slowly towards the goal. All right.
They went through the uprights.
All right.
Hey, man,
I'm going to be a beggar and a chooser, too.
53 yards. Dude's getting air under it from 53, and it's going in. So.
Yeah.
So, CJ with his legs, I thought, was a bright spot.
That was a good scramble. There was a scramble. One of his scrambles for a first down annoyed me a little bit because he had somebody like as it's drawn up over the middle for a first down as well, and he fled a clean pocket to do it. And like that's the decision to run, when to run and when not. It's good to see him running and everything, but I give him a pass to a certain degree. He's not comfortable back there behind that offensive line, but it's really affecting his decision making.
Yep. So the Rams come out in the second half. The Texans went into the locker room with a 9-7 lead at the half. These were the only points that were scored in the second half, though. The Rams come out of the locker room, middle eight minutes, scored a touchdown in the last 4 minutes of the first half, and the Rams come out on their very first drive. 5 plays, 68 yards in 2.5 minutes. Just a quintessential Sean McVay. Marched him down the field quickly, and they take the lead.
First down at the 13, Stafford under center, takes the handoff. Swings the ball left side of the end zone, and it's caught. Allen, touchdown.
What a throw.
Davis Allen, the third-year tight end, and a beautiful pass by the veteran Matthew Stafford.
I'm sorry, you got to give credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Stafford's back was the most overblown story coming into this game. He looked like there was nothing wrong with him all day long.
And part of it is, man, the Rams use play action really effectively. And this is one thing that the Texans needed to fix this year is they weren't good versus the play action last year. As many of the good things as they did, teams at times could really bait them. And on this play especially, everybody got baited. Everybody's a step late on this because they're just their eyes are in the backfield.
Yep. All right, now we're getting down to it. The most important plays of this game. Rams are driving up 14-9, looking to close out the game. You're starting to get into that range of the game, Seth. They're first and 10. They're in the red zone, the Rams are. There's about 4 minutes left. So now you're getting to that part of the game where, boy, if they score a touchdown, it's really problematic. It's a two-score game. Even if they get a field goal, the Texans need to go down and get a touchdown and a two-point conversion just to send the game to overtime. So you're in the danger zone here. The Rams' win probability here was at about 78% on this play we're about to play, and it felt like it was more than that just because they were moving the football. It's Sean McVay coaching on the other side here. But the Texans, credit their defense, credit Aziz Alshire, came up with a play to give the Texans a chance.
Stafford bootlegs out to the right, looking, throwing underneath, and the ball comes out after the catch. It's loose. There's a scrum forward. Who's got it? The Texans say they have it.
It'll be first down and 10, Houston.
Houston football, Aziz Alshire forced it. Texans get it on the bottom of the pile, and the Rams turn it over in the red zone as the Texans have the rock down 14-9 with 4:09 to go in this game.
Boy, that was from the get-go. Did you think that was a catch?
From the get-go, no. The replay clearly showed it was
a catch. I thought, I don't know, but maybe I was just being a homer and biased, but I thought it was a catch. It looked like he got at least 2 feet down.
Yeah.
So it was more that, on the replay, it was very, very obvious. If that hadn't got turned over or overturned, it would have been egregious. And it's funny. That play was really, really good by Aziz Alshire. And yet, I mean, he wasn't operating really any differently than Henry Toa was in the first quarter when he lowered his helmet trying to go for the football, and he hits Puka Nacua in the helmet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what to tell these guys anymore. Nope. I mean, if Azeez Elshire tried to just play with his chest up there, because God forbid you end up trying to make a football play, he does the right thing and he pops the ball out. It's a really good play. That's all. The one big thing that could have flipped the tables yesterday was if the Texans were able to create just one more turnover. Obviously, I mean, you can say that in any NFL game, but that was one little moment where you're like, oh yeah, yeah, the Texans need more of that. They need to go back. They need to be sure that this year they're one of the leading teams at taking the ball away, especially as long as the offense is playing the way they are.
No kidding. So the Texans get the ball back at their own 19-yard line, and they start to put a little something together on the short passing game and on the back of Nick Chubb, who busts out a 10-yard run, who busts out a 9-yard run, gets a yard off the left guard. There's a penalty that puts the Texans in first and 15, and then they're in second and 11, third and 11. They throw an incomplete pass, CJ does, to Jalen Knoll, but they get a penalty. They get a roughing the passer penalty on Kobe Turner, just a silly penalty that was definitely a penalty in today's NFL. So now you're inside the 2-minute warning. And the Texans are moving the football. CJ hits Dario Gumbawale for 16 yards to get into Rams territory. Seth, now you got all three timeouts, and you're at a point where, like, okay, now we got to kind of manage things to make sure we're moving the ball slowly enough to where we don't give the ball back to Matthew Stafford. You know, you got all three timeouts. The clock is no longer an issue. You've got first and 10 at the Rams' 25-yard line after the 16-yard pickup by Dario Gumbawale. So you are moving the football. You got a little something going. You got all three of your timeouts. You're in the catbird seat, and then this happens.
Empty backfield for CJ on first and 10 at the Ram 25. Stroud gets the snap. CJ looking, throwing underneath, and the ball comes out. The ball comes out. Dari had it. The ball popped out. The Rams have it. They recover. Fisk running away with it to the sideline to celebrate.
Okay. I mean, it was a hell of a punch out by Landman.
Yeah, well,
textbook.
You know, Kevin Harlan points out that that's only Ogunbowale's second fumble in his career.
Yeah.
I would point out he's had 166 carries
in
his career.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you looked it up. I'm like, I don't, you know, I love Dare, but like, he didn't touch the ball a whole lot.
You know, I got 50 or so receptions too. So it's not like that. It's not like some gleaming. Derrick Henry went like 378 carries at one point without fumbling the football. So the fact that Dare Gumbawale was a key feature on that drive is more of a concern than anything else. And I just, he had a really nice, you know, nice reception the play before that. The play before that. But I hated to be in that moment where this entire game I'm looking and Nick Chubb's got 13 carries in the game. Looked good, but they only felt comfortable giving him 13 carries. Whatever's going on with Joe Nixon, they need to airlift him out of Tibet or wherever the hell he is and do something illegal medically with
Chubb
him to get him back.
Looked good on that drive.
Yeah.
That drive, like, and I saw they pulled him out and the water person came over to him and they're spraying water in his mouth and they stopped and he's like, more water, more water. So I don't know if he was winded or something like that, but there were just, man, there were some weird personnel decisions. I think you're right. I love Dario Gumbawale. His teammates obviously love him. They voted him a captain. That Dario Gumbawale is the one that's catching balls for. And I know he caught a game-winning touchdown against the Jags last year. But, yeah, you have Nico Collins. This is one where I'm like, Nico Collins had 5 targets all day in this game.
I love Jesus Sanchez's affable demeanor as well. There's times where I'm like, all right, can we do more than smile?
Right.
Is this what the hell's going on here?
Now,
even, that's where they are with the running back.
Yeah, it's. I mean, Damian Pierce is just not usable right now. That's my thing, Seth. I mean, real quick, sorry. Do you have Dario Gumbawale out here catching passes and fumbling the football? You're targeting Damian Pierce on the drive before that. You drafted Woody Marks in the 4th round specifically because he's a very good pass catcher. Why is Damian getting a target over Woody Marks?
Why is Damian getting a target and just batting it away? He's like Omar Asik out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah. I feel like they went into the game thinking, well, we're going to be running back by committee. And in a Bobby Slowick type fashion, they stuck to that game plan.
Oh.
And it was also, look, the drive was going well. I don't mean to take away from that. But I'm also thinking about, great, you're getting down into the red zone. You haven't scored a touchdown yet today. I need more than this, man. And I need more than Dari Agumbawale fumbling to lose the game for him.
Dude, 5 targets for Nico Collins all day. Nico Collins, he had less than 6 targets last season in 2 games. The one that he went out of the game with a hamstring injury in the first quarter, and the one where he was taken out in the first quarter so he could get over 1,000 yards for the season in Week 18. And even in that Week 18 game, he had 5 targets in the first quarter. He had 5 targets all game yesterday.
This was, you talk about being outcoached. The Rams were thoroughly and completely outcoached. Yeah. And it starts with, the Texans were thoroughly outcoached by the Rams. And it starts with the sloppiness overall. Defensive penalties are usually aggressive penalties, and including encroachments, I'll give them that. But Darrell Taylor jumps off sides when the Rams are just trying to draw them off sides at the end of the third quarter.
There's 22 seconds on the game clock, or on the game clock. There's 27 seconds on the play clock. So the Rams can walk over to the sidelines if they want to and just end the quarter. And a lot of teams do that. And as they're lining up, I'm going, man, this is so smart by McVay. Like, he's got nothing to lose by just standing up there and trying to draw, and I'm Clint and Reggie and Patrick Parker and I are all up here, and we're looking around the room going, they're just trying to draw him. And you can tell Stafford comes up to the line and does that thing where he's like, you know, doing the hard count, the hut-hut, and he backs away for a little. Like, he's clearly trying to draw them off sides.
It wasn't like they hurried up to the line and did it or anything, and they got him there.
It's so obvious. And yes. Darrell Taylor jumps off sides with 2 seconds left in the quarter. And I'm like, this is the dumbest stuff.
They looked like such a dumb football team yesterday.
Yes.
They looked really, really dumb. They just looked, I don't even feel bad saying it.
It's
amazing
dumb.
That the score was as tight as it was.
Oh, my God.
Because in the second half especially, that's where I said, Matt Stafford clearly doesn't have a herniated brain. Because, man, he knew exactly where he wanted to go with the ball. He was getting rid of it very, very quickly. Yep. And it was just, they were at a Chinese buffet there at the end. They're just, it was $14.99, all you can eat, and we're just going to take what we want.
Man.
And we'll take our time doing it. You know, just crazy.
All right, let's get to some acknowledgments for the weekend here. We'll do a little acknowledge me. We do it every Monday at about this time. Big performances from the weekend. Because I'm so angry with that game yesterday and with the Astros of late, none of them are getting acknowledged. Sorry, guys. None of you will hear this. Sorry. Instead, I'm forced to acknowledge the Ravens and the Bills last night. Acknowledging both teams because that was one of the most watchable games without a dog. The only dog in the fight that I had was the fear that I have over facing the Ravens 4 weeks from yesterday. They lost this game, by the way. If you went to bed, a lot of Bills fans left the stadium. They were down.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were. And Josh Allen pointed that out in his post-game interview. But the Bills scored 16 points in the last few minutes of this game to come back and win 41-40. It was an incredible game with some huge offensive performances. Derrick Henry had 18 carries for 169 yards and 2 touchdowns. It felt like every carry he had, he was rumbling for at least 15 yards. The problem was, Seth, they were up 40-32. With under 4 minutes to go in the game. I mean, just this is classic Lamar and Derrick Henry in a game where they've scored 40 points already. Man, just don't turn it over. Just lean on them and keep running the football and credit the Bills. They force a fumble with Derrick Henry. They get their hand in there. They poke the ball out. He fumbles it. Josh Allen takes him down. And they end up scoring a touchdown, but they don't get the 2-point conversion. They're able to get the ball back, though. And they go down and kick a field goal from Matt Prater, who flew in on a red eye like the day before the game or something like that. Kicks a game-winning field. It was an awesome game. 41-40, and I'm watching that game. I'm going, I do not want to be on the field with either of those teams right now.
The Ravens had a 98% win probability with 3 minutes and 10 seconds.
It sounds
left
low,
to go
actually.
before Derrick Henry, who I was just talking about, he had that long stretch without a fumble. You know,
fumble.
Derrick Henry loses a fumble, and They even when they took possession there, the Bills only had a 17% win probability.
Yeah, yeah. But Josh Allen, man, you're defending.
Josh Allen, he turned it into like the old Tom Brady dynamic of like, man, no matter how bad a blowout looks like for the Patriots, yeah, on a Monday night game, even if the Patriots are losing by 21, you got to stay watching until the end of the game.
Got to. All right, I hate doing the text.
Disappointed in Bills fans, wow.
Yeah, a lot of them left. I was half paying attention. I was half show prepping and half watching the game, so I didn't. But after the game, that was a big topic. Tirico made a wisecrack about it. Like, who chose to stay around. And Josh Allen said something when he was getting interviewed by Melissa Stark after the game about it, too. About, hey, you know, for the people who stayed around. So, yeah, it was a thing for sure. Man, the Texans, I hate that you're forcing me to acknowledge other people around the NFL. Like Aaron Rodgers. Got to acknowledge him, man. First game as a Pittsburgh Steeler. 22 of 30. 244 yards. 4 touchdowns. No interceptions, and the Steelers beat the Jets, his former team, at MetLife Stadium. He'll be in the Pettycast tomorrow. I wasn't able to pull the audio of him saying how much he loved beating everybody with the Jets, not just Aaron Glenn, who, by the way, if we recall, had Aaron Rodgers come in, meet with him face-to-face to tell him, we really don't want you to be our quarterback anymore. Those 4 touchdown passes had to feel good for Aaron Rodgers yesterday, I would say.
They had to feel good for him. He was particularly petty after the press conference. He was given a chance to take a shot at Aaron Glenn specifically, and he just said something like, I just like beating everybody in the Jets organization. Yeah. I mean, Justin Fields, though, he looked good.
Yeah.
Maybe end up, I'm curious to see what we see out of Justin Fields here.
Yep.
I mean, like I'm very, very curious to see what Daniel Jones turns into this year. Because, man, I warned all of you. Yeah. I warned all of you that Shane Steichen might get the very best out of Daniel Jones.
I need to see him against a team that hasn't quit on their coach in week one. Yeah. I'm gonna pump the brakes on Daniel, and I've got him on the list here. Well, I'll acknowledge him. Daniel Jones was excellent. You're right, Seth. He was great yesterday. Certainly, he had an effort that we never saw from Anthony Richardson last year. Not one time did Anthony Richardson go out there and go 22 of 29 for 272, not turn the ball over, throw a touchdown pass, beautiful touchdown pass to Michael Pittman in that game, and then. Vulture a couple touchdowns from Jonathan Taylor. Two touchdowns. I have Jonathan Taylor on one of my teams. But Daniel Jones, 7 carries, 26 yards, and a couple short touchdowns down there at the 1 yard line. Daniel Jones got the Jalen Hurts treatment yesterday. You know, and mm-hmm. I say that because, as you point out, Shane Steichen is the, Jalen Hurts' former OC. This was the Daniel Jones looked tailor-made for what Shane Steichen wants to do offensively.
Like when Shane Steichen, when he has a quarterback who can run some or a lot, and he uses the RPOs, he uses every bit of a quarterback's athleticism to make defenses uncomfortable and indecisive. And when you've got Jonathan Taylor behind, I want to say it's almost like a muted version, a very, very, maybe not that, a muted version of Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
Yep.
It's that you make your offensive line better, and the Colts already have a good offensive line, and they've got good skill, position players too. So whatever you think of Daniel Jones or what his ceiling is, I think Shane Steichen's got a good chance of getting him to his ceiling.
Yeah, yesterday was a great start, no doubt about it. All right, I'm going to acknowledge Peter Schrager here. We're not a huge Schrager shop here, but this was a big thing on Friday after we were off the air on Get Up. Is it Ryan Clark pulled the I'll let the audio do the talking here. This was Peter Schrager. They're talking about the Thursday night football game here and CeeDee Lamb, and did CeeDee Lamb lose the game for the Dallas Cowboys? This was Peter Schrager on the set with Ryan Clark and a couple of other players.
2nd and 11. It was the one target. He runs the out route.
You wake up this morning saying A.J. Brown had a better day than CeeDee Lamb?
Wait, you know what you wake up saying, though? A.J. Brown's team is 1-0.
Of course.
Right, I get it. But the thing is this, though, and we shouldn't do this on TV. And so I apologize if people think this is rude. That's the non-player.
Oh, stop. That's CeeDee Lamb is
Let me tell you why. I'm not saying
I'm not looking at fantasy football, Ryan. I'm not. Don't belittle me like that. I could come in and say, as 3X players are saying one thing and give an alternative perspective that maybe CeeDee Lamb did play well. And
Peter, what I need for you to do is not get mad and let me finish for once.
Okay, go on.
It wasn't about you. It was going to be about me.
For once.
Wait a second. It wasn't about you. That exchange started off with, that's the non-player in you.
Now, Ryan Clark, his explanation, I'll paraphrase the explanation because I'm curious to get your take on this, Seth. His take he went on to have was that CeeDee Lamb, despite having 7 catches for 110 yards, I'm sure was sitting in his car stewing on the way home about the 3 drops. You know, Ryan Clark said, I could have had 12 tackles and 2 picks in a game, but if I miss a tackle that loses the game for my team, my family knows not to come near me for the next 2 days.
This is the problem, because I think in a lot of ways, Ryan Clark, it was, when people were discussing it, I could tell a lot of people hadn't necessarily even watched the clip, because they were saying that Ryan Clark had said the classic, oh, you don't know because you didn't play the game. I think where he was going with it was, what he could have said was, this is how it is from a player's perspective.
Yep.
I want to tell you how it is from a player's perspective. The problem is, twice there, he treated Peter Schrager like a child.
Yeah.
Like, he said, first, that's the non-player in you. And then he said, what you need to do is be quiet and let me finish, or whatever he said like that. It was this whole superior tone about it, I think, that was off-putting.
I'm glad you said
that. But I don't think he wasn't as bad as saying, like, just trying to end the argument by saying, you don't know because you didn't play the game.
Right. No, I went and watched the whole segment because I wanted to make sure, because everybody was talking about this thing, and Ryan Clark was taking some, and I'm with you, like, his delivery could have been way, way better. I thought his take afterwards was one that only a player could have. Like, there's a ton of stuff that I defer to you on as the former player on the show that I know. I have no clue what the dynamics are like in a locker room after a loss, or the interpersonal part. There are things where there are things that truly only players know about this that we don't. But Ryan Clark, at the beginning of this segment, they were going around the table getting takes on the Cowboys losing that game. Orlovsky gives a very measured take. I forget who the other player was on the set there, gave a very measured take. Schrager gave a very measured analytical take that we'll hear the end of here before Clark leads into his take with this.
You look at what Booker did. You look what those guys got, and all them out there. They were moving that Eagles defensive line, which we heard all offseason was going to be this great, great advantage for Philadelphia.
I know what you want.
What?
See,
what
these
it?
Three acted like they ain't never been on Get Up after a Cowboys game. But I'm here for you, Greeny. That's why I wore my blue. If those balls are caught, we're talking about Dak Prescott playing as well as we've ever seen him play.
Good enough, Ben. So all three guys, Teddy Bruschi was the other one. Teddy Bruschi, Orlovsky, and Peter Schrager all give their take on the game. They were all solid takes from what I remember. And in comes Ryan Clark going, these three guys that just gave their opinions, they're not as good as me, because I've been on, you know, like, they're acting like they've never been. Like, he can't help but take a shot at his three co-hosts in delivering his opinion
It was a classic. No, and then the third thing I forgot to mention, him starting off by saying, that's the non-player in you, and then claiming afterwards, hey, don't make it about you.
Yeah.
I was going to be talking about myself. Like, all right, man, I see what you're trying to do here. It's just, Ryan Clark, it feels like he's apologizing to a colleague or somebody, RG3's wife, like every 3 weeks these days.
Yeah, he tweeted. It's funny, too, because he tweeted out an apology. I'll be curious if he's on today and he happens to be on with Schrager, if he apologized. I don't really care one way or the other. It's just a thing on talk radio. And I'm not one of these people saying ESPN needs to fire Ryan Clark. Like, whatever. Okay.
But he's following a good game plan.
It's disrespectful. It's disrespectful, but it's not a firing offense. Like, it'll play itself out. It's not like he's harassing somebody or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'll be curious. He tweeted out an apology. Literally, like, in the middle of plays in the Chargers. He's live tweeting the Chargers-Chiefs game. He's like, you know, like, Omarion Hampton up the middle for 3 yards. Boy, he had some room on the outside. And then the next tweet, I'd like to apologize after an incident. On and off camera, he said today.
Yeah, there was an off camera. On and off camera. Yeah. What happened off camera?
Me too.
That's the interesting part. Yeah.
Me too. All right, so that's acknowledge me. I do want to get to one other thing that we had in Acknowledge Me. Maybe it's better suited for the Pettycast tomorrow, but I do want to touch on it real quick. What are the etiquette rules about home run balls in the outfield? I want to run this past Pope Zaza. I feel like the czar of common sense is Pope Zaza. What are the rules on snagging a home run ball? Because boy, this turned into an incident this weekend. And C.J. Stroud talking like we've not heard him talk after football games yesterday. A couple things in particular I want to circle back to. We'll do that coming up next.
Yeah.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I take just negative plays. I think it's kind of obvious. You know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot consistently and expect to win. And that starts with me, you know, with a lot of different things. I got to get rid of the ball better and, you know, use my legs maybe a little more. But, yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope still. We did a lot of good things. You know, it's a really good defense, it's a really good team. But I definitely think we could have won. But just you can shoulda, woulda, coulda all day. We didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't do the right things. So when you come out in NFL lollygagging and you know not going through the motions, that kind of happens. So I think we'll be all right. But I think it's a good wake up call for it.
That is not a throwaway line right there. Lollygagging, going through the motions at the end of that right there.
Whenever CJ. A 23 or 24 year old man uses the word lollygagging,
he's serious.
That's who was gagging on lollies yesterday is what I need to know. What who the hell are the lollygaggers? What is this?
Name names.
This about? And again, when I'm like, look, when you got the starting quarterback talking about how you can't be lollygagging around, and it's a game where you have 11 penalties, not kind of aggressive penalties, illegal shifts, delay of games. Almost another delay a game in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
You know, CJ just trying to get the snap off at times. It looked like a shoddy operation. It looked like Bobby Slowick's first game against the Ravens a couple years ago.
Same number of points. 9 points.
Yeah, you don't score a single point in the second half. You don't score a touchdown all day long. And a lot of it, just like last year, comes back to, wow, the offensive line doesn't seem to be blocking all that well. C.J. Stroud pressured on 41% of his passes.
Yep.
Which is, last year, C.J. Stroud had one of the highest pressure rates in the league at 43% or whatever it was.
It was 39% last year.
39% on
39% because that's what Mahomes got pressured in the Super Bowl. Remember that? That was like, hey, the amount of times Mahomes is running around, that was a normal day for C.J. Stroud last
year. CJ's was actually higher on the season
last year. Yeah, it was like 39 to 38 or something like that.
Okay,
if I remember.
So it's bad. It was bad.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, there's times where I can criticize C.J.'s decision at times to either run when he had a clean pocket, but at the same time, and I don't want to make excuses for everybody all over the place, but I don't know how he's going to develop pocket presence when playing behind that level of pass protection. It gets worse and worse as quarterbacks have to deal with it year after year.
Here's one more from C.J. Stroud that I thought was really interesting after the game yesterday. Why do you feel like today was a wake-up call?
I just think the way we practiced this week, I think we could have practiced better. I think, you know, I love the confidence we have, but there's a, I don't know, I always say there's like a type of mindset is like, did I do enough? And I think it's a healthy way to be because then you'll probably do more. So I just, for me, you know, preparing, I got to do a better job. And I also got to hold my guys accountable, you know, for that one exotic. And it's the first game of the year. We got a lot of exotic looks we did not expect. They did too, but they made the play. So you can come up with a million excuses. We got to just be better.
Okay.
Yeah,
didn't practice great all week.
Didn't practice great all week. Saw a lot of exotic looks that they didn't expect. And I think that, again, comes back to first-time offensive coordinator where, yeah, you you expect to see exotic looks you didn't expect. If there's one thing that you can predict, it's that unpredictable things will happen.
Yeah.
And you just, it's pinning down exactly which unpredictable things are going to happen. That's the hard part of it. The Rams seemed way more ready for that on their offensive side of the ball than the Texans did. And I'm not throwing away all hope. It was ugly yesterday. Lots of coordinators look ugly in their first couple of games as coordinator. Vic Fangio has been in the league for decades, and the Eagles defense did not get off to a hot start last year.
No.
And Vic Fangio's first year as a defensive coordinator, they end up being the best defense in the league. So, there's plenty of room for improvement. Obviously the question is, all right, over these next couple of weeks, how much improvement do we see?
Yeah. Yeah. Tampa Bay on Monday night, and then Jacksonville, who, you know, they, it's Carolina on the other side, but they looked impressive in their game against the Panthers. That's week three. So, and that'll be a short week because you're playing Monday night against Tampa and you're going on the road to face the Jags after that.
What did the, did you box score watch Travis Hunter at all?
I heard on the way home last night, I was listening to one of the national like rundowns, like it was halftime, I think, of the Bills and the Ravens. I'm listening. And I think he had 8 targets in the game. He had like 4 catches, like 4 short catches, I think.
He had 6 receptions for 33 yards.
Yeah, it was a lot of
dink and dunk. Redefining the game of football.
No, not at all.
I don't know how many tackles he had. I know he had at least 1 tackle early in the game,
yep.
But yeah.
Yeah.
That's been taken off the board. I don't know. That must have been a special teams tackle.
Yeah, that's so the game of football.
Oh no, yeah, he finished the game with 1 tackle and 6 catches for 33 yards. I'm redefining the game.
I'm looking at the definition of football and it's the same as it was yesterday morning. It's not been redefined. I'm looking it up on Webster's right now. Hey, you saw this thing with this they're calling her Philly Karen on the internet.
Yeah.
This woman who if you missed it, there was a Marlins Phillies game in Miami, where there were Philly fans in the upper deck. Harrison Bader hits a home run, and the ball lands in the row right in front of these Phillies fans, one of whom is this older woman in a Phillies jersey. A man who appeared to be with his family there, we know he was there with his son at the very least, kind of runs down the row,
yep.
Ball is rolling around on the floor in the row right there, and he picks it up. As there's 5 people reaching for it.
He picks it up. In front of the Karen, Philly Karen.
Yeah. He reaches down, picks it up, and walks back over to his seat and plunks it down in his son's glove. He went and got that home run ball. The Karen comes running over and gets right up in his face saying, "You took my ball. That was my ball." There were cameras where you could actually hear her saying that to him. And the guy was surprised. He was shocked. He had this look on his face like, "Why are you yelling at me?" Ultimately, he decides to just take the ball from his 10-year-old son, who was there for his birthday, by the way, and give the ball to her just because I don't feel like dealing with this crazy person.
No. In no way, shape, or form did she have first dibs on that ball.
Thank you,
like,
Pope.
He didn't jostle her out of the way. There was no, am I wrong? There was no physicality involved whatsoever.
None.
The ball was in front of her. If somebody had been sitting in that seat in front of her, would have been that person's ball. I don't know why there's any question about that.
Yeah.
There's no way in which baseball has ever operated is that ever been a thing. The guy didn't knock anybody out of the way or anything. It's just, that's his ball.
Yes.
And I don't know where she gets off like acting like somehow she's entitled to that just because it's in front of her. But then the really ugly side of this came from the people that decided they had to also criticize the father. For not protecting his son.
Yes.
I'm like, dude, this guy, you get caught unaware. A woman is assailing you. The last thing you want in the world is like, listen, I don't want to go viral for all the wrong reasons.
Okay.
Maybe, whatever, lady. Here you go.
Okay. So that's good. So this is basically a preview of the Pettycast for tomorrow, I think. We got to revisit this tomorrow because there's great audio that goes with this thing. And it ended up working out for the kid, too. He got an autographed bat, got to meet Harrison Bader. It all worked out. But, man.
If the guy had run in down that aisle and there was a kid, if Philly Karen was a child.
Yeah.
It's still the right thing to do would have been for him to hand it to the kid.
Yes.
But even in that situation, it's still, man, like there was no jostling whatsoever.
I agree.
He had a clear path to the ball.
This is why you're Pope Zaza and everybody else is not. Good ruling, I would say. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies, and tomorrow will be a glorious day.
It will. It's going to be a better day tomorrow, everybody, I promise, because the Astros, I don't believe, play tonight, and we got Monday Night Football tonight, so that's all good. All right, and you can hear that game right here on Sports Radio 610. All right, we are done. We are out of time. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer are up next with Texans Monday.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.